and we do not compromise in bringing those voices to you. We will not be intimidated by people that say we should or should not have certain guests on, depending on their ideological proclivities. No, we are not going to play to the choir to the left. No, we don't play to the choir to the right. You know what we're about. We're renegades, and we're going to keep running. Today, now this is a subject I'm deeply fascinated in. We're going to be talking about Hitler as a British agent and about the conspiracy that brought Hitler and World War II and this whole phony show that came your way way back when, called World War II, where a lot of innocent people died for no good reason, just so that, well, this is my take, maybe not my guest. My guest will have his own take. His name is Greg Hallett. Greg Hallett has written a book called Hitler Was a British Agent. And this is authored and co-authored by Greg Hallett himself and someone named The Spy Master. And they have worked underground. They have infiltrated Nazis, communists, Marxists, vicious gangs, criminals in New Zealand. Greg hails from New Zealand, and so we're happy to bring him here to the States and to bring his voice forward. I think you'll find him to be a very fascinating guest. Greg Hallett, welcome to Channel Z. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I'm interested in this subject intensely because I've done a lot of study about World War II and about the conspiracy to bring about war in the first place. But we haven't heard that much about, we know about Hitler and his occultic proclivities, but we really don't know that much about Hitler being a British agent. But that would make perfect sense given his roots and his financing, the people financing him. But first, Greg, tell us a little about yourself. Your bio here is quite fascinating. It says that you trained in various psychological models in parallel with your architecture degree in training, and that you've traveled widely behind the Iron Curtain during the Cold War, hitchhiking on planes, making bunks out of airmail bags. You're amazed that you wake up in the morning. It sounds to me that you've posed as, you know, you've been in disguise undercover. Are you in the intelligence field?
No, I'm not in the intelligence field, and if I was, I'm due 4 decades of back pay.
Okay, so this was all a knowledge quest.
A lot of it just happened. I just happened to be in places where history was happening.
Yes.
I was living in the Eastern Bloc during the Cold War, and I got a postcard from my mother saying, go and see this guy. So I went and saw this New Zealander, and he gave me a job project managing a building at Airport One, Ferryhead Edge in Budapest. And that was on the 2nd of November, 89.
Wow.
A week later, the Berlin Wall came down, and we had a discussion who to send to Moscow to buy some buildings. We knew that the buildings were going to go up 250% in 2.5 months.
I see.
So I was the least valuable employee, so I'd been there the shortest.
Mm-hmm.
So I got sent to Moscow to buy some buildings.
Okay, and now this was...
Sorry?
Well, this was right when the Iron Curtain, you know, when you had the collapse. This is when the most unstable time in history for Russia, really. And you were able to go there, to, I guess, to buy buildings before the inflation kicked in.
Yeah, that's correct. At the time, it was the most dangerous city in the world. So
yeah,
I was the least valuable employee, and I got sent there.
Okay.
And while I was there, I got a clean interview with the KGB, which was kind of interesting. The way I did that is I pretty much made a fool of myself in Moscow. I did things like go and buy some Russian Army general's boots and jump up and down on the bed in the hotel, being silly. And then the day that I'd done that, I'd got a haircut. And the only haircut you could get in Russia was a Stalinist blow wave. And I had my moustache trimmed, and that looked like Stalin. I had the Russian boots on and all the Russian gear I'd bought.
Oh, no.
And I looked like a young Stalin.
Okay.
So my photographs got faxed around all the bureaus, and there were diplomatic types recognizing me in the street and waving and smirking and smiling. And then I had a chance to invite the KGB agent following me to lunch. So I took him to lunch, and I told him what the West was doing to the East, and he told me what the East was doing to the West.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that the people in Russia were deconstructed, that is, their subconscious had been altered to that of the Russian state as opposed to the individual. So I developed a method of reconstructing the subconscious.
And what do you mean? You mean, Greg, in other people?
Yeah, in other people, yes.
Okay.
So I leaked that out in January 2002. And then in July 2002, I got a call saying there was a scientist from Russia who wanted to see me. So he came down to New Zealand and stayed with me for about 3 weeks and briefed me and showed me the equipment that the KGB used for deconstructing the subconscious. And he converted it to reconstructing the subconscious. So it was basically a three-week-long trip, a three-week-long intelligence meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been in intelligence, and he's never been in intelligence, but we both garnered a lot of information. And it was soon after that that I met some real intelligence officers who started to dictate history to me.
Wow.
And they've dictated 10 books to me, and Hitler Was a British Agent is volume 5, and it's 480 pages of intelligence history, what really happened in World War II and the build-up and what happened after.
Yeah, it just seems that Russia, the modern Soviet Union, was created by, you know, capitalists, and Hitler was bankrolled by, we know, American bankers and international bankers.
Yeah.
He was greatly admired by Henry Ford.
He was. Ford was a fan of Hitler's.
A fan, literal fan. And there's a lot of people that are still fans of Hitler's.
Yeah, most of the governments of the world.
Yes, because they're just amazed with this little Austrian house painter from Vienna, what he could do.
He was trained by the British. His missing years, Hitler was trained in Tavistock in southwest England.
Okay, we've all heard of that, the Tavistock Institute.
Yeah, Tavistock was a place where deconstruction took place, and 500 years of military intelligence information was downloaded to Hitler from February to November 1912.
Did he have his speaking ability in the beginning, or was that something that was bred into him?
That was trained.
Trained into him.
He was basically an empty vessel.
Huh.
And the way they take the empty vessel down to absolute zero and then build them up again is through sexual training.
Right, sexual trauma, trauma-based.
Sexual trauma.
Like sodomy, you mean sodomy?
Yeah, and see, Hitler was a coprophiliac. He liked to be shat on.
Okay, so in other words...
And what that meant was that the higher position that he was put into, mm-hmm. the more embarrassed he would be if that information came out. And that made him easy to control, very easy to control. You just have to mention it, and he would do whatever you wanted.
Okay, because he'd be stimulated, and in that state, he was an automaton. But
that was the wood on him, and the wood is the strings that direct the person in whatever direction you want them to go. And as long as you've got the wood on someone, like the dirt on someone,
right,
especially a politician, you can move them in whatever direction, or their career will be over.
You mean you're talking about American politics? Because that's...
Well, I'm talking about politics right through. This is the way politics operates.
Yes. Well, this is a discussion we had earlier today on another broadcast, and that is it's well known that not only in politics, but entertainment, business, law, the judiciary, if you will, just about anything that's a high-profile job is controlled at this point in the world through that kind of through blackmail, really.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Social blackmail. Social sexual blackmail.
Right. You know that one of my guests at one point was a candidate for Skull and Bones, which I'm sure you've researched.
Yeah, he was a candidate.
He was a candidate.
One of the 15.
He was a candidate for this last year. And he said, he had to go through a Palladian rite. I said, what's a Palladian rite? And he said, well, that's when a bunch of these guys are going to have sex with this one girl that represents Athena. And they put that on film. And I said, you mean once you do that, that you don't have any more money problems?
Yeah, that's it.
And he literally straight-faced, stone cold sober, he told me, yes, that's it. That's all that's involved.
Yeah.
And then you're a member of Skull and Bones.
Yep.
And I said, okay, so you sell your soul there. And he goes, yeah. But then you're taken care of and you can go be a minister in a church. Yeah. And no one will bother you. Right.
Yeah.
So you're talking about the nitty-gritty, dirty, awful, horrid secret of this world.
Yep.
And we hate that. And that's what
that's the way the world is run. It's run on shame. It's run on sexual shame.
And that's really the key to what happened in the Garden of Eden. It was really the eyes were opened to what? Shame. It was shame that created the power. Okay.
Yes.
Well, now that we agree, gosh, it's amazing. I talked to one guy in Arkansas today. I'm talking to you in New Zealand. We're having the same exact conversation. We're just continuing.
Well, it must be true then.
Well, I've had this conversation around the world. We all agree on it. And what the Satanists will tell me is, they'll say, okay, so you got it now? And I said, no, I don't have it. I'm going to continue on. Well, then you're a fool. And I'm like, no, I just believe in God, and I know my Lord, and I'm continuing on with him, and I'll do what he says. And if you want to take me out, fine. You want to play games with me, take your best shot. Anyway, back to you, Greg. Look, I agree with you totally where you're going. So Adolf Hitler, he was trained at Tavistock. He was they used trauma-based mind control on him.
Yep.
And sex and blackmail. He was an empty.
And his teeth.
Excuse me?
And his teeth. See, most people had mercury fillings, but Hitler had metal fillings covered in porcelain.
Wow.
So his teeth were virtually a radio receiver. And the voice pulses that go to his lower jaw go to his conscious mind. And the pulses that went to his upper jaw were to his subconscious mind. So he could be alerted to things like, you know, get out of the trench, it's going to be blown up.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, he heard that voice, got out of the trench, and everyone in the trench was blown up.
Wow.
That's why we had mercury fillings for so long. And then people started to get porcelain fillings in the 90s when other people were complaining that they could hear the radio through their teeth.
Yes.
And then we find in the 2001 Charlie's Angels movie, that they had microchips, two-way radio microchips, appendages fitted over their teeth that they could use to hear and speak with. So, you know, that's real technology.
But they had that. They had that back in the early part of the 20th century then?
Yeah, yeah. See, when things go public, like when you get an invention that's public, it's often been used by the military for decades beforehand.
Okay, so the technology
like the internet, for example.
Okay, so technology.
Microwaves were used by the military from about 1950.
Okay,
from 1939. From 1939, microwaves were used by the military.
Wow, so.
And we got them in our houses in what, you know, the late 70s?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so basically what you have here is you have Adolf Hitler, who was an empty vessel. They used trauma-based mind control and all these scientific techniques to use this certain power over him, and then they built him up. They rigged him like a robot. I guess they would keep programming him through his teeth.
Well, the teeth was one thing.
Okay.
Yeah, but they also programmed his mind, and you know, to do things like hate the Jews, and he was programmed to kill you know, the Poles and the Czechs and the French, and then to attack England.
Right.
Whenever the word peace was mentioned, and to treat German men as heroes and sacrificial heroes.
Well, it seems to me that he was had this idea from his history. He seemed to be very interested in the occult.
Yeah, he was.
In this Aryan bringing the ascended masters to Earth. I think he brought in these Tibetan monks, apparently,
yeah,
to do spiritual warfare against his enemies. Because he was...
He was involved in a Tibetan Freemasonry lodge.
Okay.
And he was definitely influenced by the occult. Very much so. As is all politics today.
Right. And so do you think Hitler had his own mind in his pursuit of the occult, or was he being pushed that way?
Hitler was only intellectually active when he was being aggressive and taking over countries and doing large military things. When it came to the small things like relationships, he was absolutely useless. He killed quite a few people with his own hand. He killed Leo Raubel and then his girlfriend, Gally Raubel.
Mm-hmm.
He shot her on the 18th of September 1931, and that's written off as a suicide. He had about 13 girlfriends, and about five of them suicided.
It's sad. It's really...
So, you know, history just covers this up. History does not mention that Hitler was a hand-to-hand killer.
No, you're the first person I've heard say that, and I've looked at quite a bit lately on Hitler and never heard that before.
You see, part of the Tavistock training was that he was trained to hate the Jews, and Leo Raubel was married to his half-sister, and Raubel was a Jew, and he had a Jewish name. So Hitler's first job, Tavistock, was to go out and kill Raubel.
And the point of
and
that...
And then now history covers up the dates of Raubel's death and confuses it all, and also covers up the dates of the son's death and confuses that, and then writes off Gally Raubel's death as a suicide, saying that at the time Hitler was out of town, an hour and a half away in another city, but he wasn't. He cancelled that appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to dinner in a restaurant until about 1:30 that morning, went home, had an argument with Gally, punched her, broke her nose, and then shot her.
Okay, so
with
he has a cold...
His own gun was the only gun that was in that apartment.
Okay, a cold-blooded killer. And, of course, they would cover it up because, look, you had the Tavistock Institute, British intelligence, the free...
Yeah, if Hitler got exposed, they would have had to postpone World War II. or replace him with another agent.
And they put a lot into him. I mean, how many man-hours and money do you think they...
Oh, he'd been selected before his birth. He'd been selected right back in 1836 when his grandmother was a maid working for the month of August at a Rothschild's in Vienna.
I heard it was his mother working at the Rothschild's. Not his grandmother, but it's his grandmother?
No, it was his grandmother. Because his father was incestuous. His father married his niece. So Hitler's aunt and mother were the same person.
Okay.
He was from an incestuous family. Were incestuous. And all the relatives, like the Koppensteins and the other branches of the family, all intermarried. And incest was largely cured by the motor car.
Mm-hmm, I understand.
Because you could drive to another village or two villages away.
Yes.
And get a woman pregnant. But whereas in the old days, you had to do your hard day's work and then walk to another village.
Okay.
You know, so the people who were slow walkers were incestuous.
Right. It was, yeah, I would say sin by convenience. But look, the whole point is that he was in the Rothschild, somehow in the Rothschild empire there.
Yeah, he was a quarter Rothschild.
He is a Rothschild bastard.
Yeah. Well, he's an illegitimate child of the Rothschilds.
Okay, that's...
And the Rothschilds bred financial allies and enemies at war. And then they would fund both sides of the war and make huge profits. And at the end of the war, everyone would be incredibly poor, except for the bankers who had funded both sides, who could then go right through and just buy everything up. And that's part of the reason why the Illuminati, the 500 richest groups, families, own over 90% of everything on the planet. And it's through war and financing wars.
Yeah, I almost feel like asking the next question and then coming back to Hitler, but do you think we're seeing a repeat of that now for this World War III push?
Oh, absolutely. Like, history repeats every 60 years, plus or minus 2 years.
Mm.
Right? And
so where are we? Let's see.
Well, you've got overlaps. Like, you've got the Second World War, 1939 to 45.
Okay.
And then you've got the 60-year cycle, and then, you know, so anything up to, like, sort of August 2007. It's still within that repeat pattern.
So the war could begin any day now through 2007?
Well, the media is basically a front for the warlords.
Yes.
Like, there's no truth in the media.
No.
And they're just outright liars for war.
They've admitted it to me. They admit they lie, but they say, oh, look, I have bills to pay, you know?
Mm. So, you know, a lot of people are moving away from watching the TV news and now getting it off the net and off podcasts.
And right now we're you're being heard on the Podosphere, but right now as we speak, you're being heard live on a live stream, the same stream that the media uses, that large radio stations use, we're using right now.
Oh, very good, very good.
So, Greg, there's a new audience, and we appreciate you folks being here and listening in. This is the first interview I've done where we have a simultaneous podcast recording with a live feed.
Very good.
So they're hearing you right now, and they're getting your information. Well, I'm fascinated, Greg, just from what you've said. I know you speak truth because I've already researched it out from other sources.
Yeah.
And you're speaking absolute truth here. You did clear up that one thing about it not being Hitler's mother, but his grandmother, who worked in Vienna, who was from Vienna, who worked for the Rothschild family. And the Rothschilds, of course, were the ones that basically have gone around the world infiltrating and creating their banking system to maximally profit. And I think there's a couple of countries left that they haven't gotten, one being Iran.
Right. Well, the president of Iran is really speaking out. You know, he's really saying things.
He's
one of the few countries' leaders that is not censored.
Yeah, and I can just see them frothing at the mouth to get this guy.
Yeah, it's a dangerous game.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous game.
But, well, they've already had one assassination attempt on him that failed. So we'll just see where this goes. Today, Iran is back in the news saying, we're going to go ahead and build our we're resuming our nuke program, and to hell with the world. Meaning to hell with the controllers of the world.
Is that the nuclear program?
Yes.
Nuclear weapons have become a trading weapon, right? So we haven't had any nuclear attacks on any other country in the since Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So they've been used as a trading tool.
Yes.
We've got nuclear weapons, therefore our trading power is higher. So in some ways, nuclear weapons have become a force for peace.
But then on the other hand, one wonders why we haven't seen a detonation since those days. Or we may have seen a small nuke use in Afghanistan that was covered up by the media, but we haven't really had the overt mushroom cloud yet.
Yeah, and we've had depleted uranium going off in Iraq.
Yeah, and why would we use depleted uranium that's killing our own troops? That's what I'd like to know. I have no answer for that. Other than
all governments now are involved in the occult,
right?
And they are involved in killing, and they don't particularly mind whether it's theirs or some other countries.
Okay,
as long as the killing goes on.
Do you think, Greg, that it's a population reduction program, then?
There's definitely a huge move for depopulation. Absolutely huge move.
Because DU...
The American government has been absolutely planning depopulation, and there's documented records that the American government wants to reduce its own population by 50% by the year 2050. But there's another move by the year 2020 to remove 25% of the world's population, which is 1.5 billion people, so 1,500 million people.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is, if we do go to war now, there will be quite a few million people killed just by that. But anyway, we're right at the precipice. So
Well, you can tell when you know a major world war is likely to happen. It's when all the press lies all around the world.
Well,
and that's what we've got. We've got absolutely outright lying press. And you know, in New Zealand, if we have a major story coming up and you see it on the net, what we get is a cat up a tree and the fire brigade rescuing the cat.
Exactly.
You know, or a raincoat on the motorway. You know, it's that
exactly.
bad here.
That's
it's
right.
That bad.
It's gotten that bad, but what we have here is we have, I don't know how it is down in New Zealand, but here what we have is we have people that are so mind controlled by their televisions and by the lifestyle here that they actually seem to be hypnotic, you know, victims of mind control, just like you would have in the professional military circles. They walk around in a haze, in a daze, completely.
Yeah,
with no connection to reality whatsoever.
Yeah, the TV conditions people to believe the best in their country's leaders so that they cannot believe that their country's leader would do anything bad, like import the avian flu or import heroin into their own country or attempt a nuclear strike on another country or be a double agent. You know, like a lot of the country's leaders are double agents, and a lot of them are sexually bribed. You know,
well,
so we've got a lot of the leaders around the world right now are not heterosexual.
No, of course not.
They are in front marriages, and that information alone makes them double agents. So if we were to list all the leaders of all the countries of the world that had sexual records against them, we'd lose half of them.
Greg,
it's as bad as Hitler.
Yeah, what you're saying is, I've been saying this for 4 years now. And when I began saying, coming out publicly and talking about the occult and occult homosexuality, occult bisexual, you know, use of sexual ritual, killing and all that in occult ritual, and the fact that this disease is spread around the world, people thought I was some sort of escapee from a nut house, you know?
Yeah.
And
but a lot of people are listening now.
Then they listen now, yeah.
And they go and they talk amongst their friends, and they come back a couple of years later, and they go, well, you know what you said, da-da-da-da-da. That was right. Yeah, but we should get back to Hitler as a British agent. And
please do.
Possibly one of the things I want to talk about, the most exciting thing, is Hitler's escape out of Berlin.
Yes.
At the end of World War II. He was supposed to have got married at midnight on the 29th of April to Eva Braun, 29th of April 1945, which he did. And then he was supposed to have committed suicide. About 3:30 p.m. on the 30th of April. But he didn't. It was a doppelganger. And there were five other Hitler doppelgangers found around the Chancellery building.
Wow.
On the 28th of April, Hitler ordered the tunnels by the River Spree flooded, and the tunnels were being used by the Red Cross as a hospital, and they'd recently been discovered by the Russians. So there were Russian soldiers there, there were nurses and doctors and a whole lot of German victims, and the upper lock was open. The lower lock was closed, the tunnels were flooded, and everyone in there died. And then the lower lock was opened, the bodies were let out, Hitler and his entourage went through the tunnels with bodies, jumped into a WK-202 submarine, which is a half-size submarine, 35 meters long. And just had the conning tower above the surface. And then they went down the River Spree to Lake Havel and waited there for a day and a half. And then the Russians overtook the submarine and took Berlin on the 1st and 2nd of May. So they, by then they'd gone past Hitler and his submarine. Lake Havel is in southwest Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hanna Reich, flying a Junkers Ju-52 3M-14GE, which is an old-looking corrugated iron plane that had armor plating for the pilot. And it was basically a hot rod. It was an old-looking plane that had been really hotted up. It landed on Lake Havel, and then the submarine came under the plane, and then Hitler and Eva Braun got onto the plane. The plane took off, and it flew for about 12-15 minutes over to Lake Müggelsee, which is in southeast Berlin, the high side of the River Spree. And they were met by a motor launch with Ian Fleming and Carolyn Saunders in it.
Ian Fleming, the author of James Bond?
Ian Fleming, the author of the James Bond books, yep. And this is the 2nd of May, 1945. And they passed some documents with bank account numbers, some full bank account numbers and some partial bank account numbers. And then took the motor launch and beached it on the shore. Ian Fleming set a 10-minute timing device for the launch to explode, to get rid of the evidence. And they got onto a British Lysander 3A plane, and in the book I've given the serial number of the plane. And then they took off at 5 p.m. Now, in intelligence circles, people give indications, they give messages that this is what happened in history, but they can't actually tell you. So 007 referred to the 2nd of May, 0205, which is 007, and 5 p.m. being 1700 hours, 007.
Wow.
So that's why all his books were 007. And they flew off in the Lysander, and then the Hanna-Reich and the Junkers followed them. And they flew to Barcelona, and they were met by Ramon Serrano Suna, who was the former 2IC of General Franco. And Hitler lived in the Parc du Citadella, which is opposite the National History Museum in Barcelona, and he was known as the German gardener and took care of roses. And the entire time he was there, he spoke in English.
Hitler went to Spain, yeah. And Hitler retired alive.
Yeah.
And of course, James Bond was nothing more than some sort of British agent by the name of Ian Fleming, who created James Bond. Am I right?
Well, it was actually James Bond was initially in operation. Ian Fleming was the first leader of Operation James Bond, and that was designed to bring Martin Bormann out of Berlin, which they did.
Okay.
Now, halfway through the James Bond operation, Ian Fleming, Carolyn Saunders came down on a launch to the River Spree, grabbed Ian Fleming, and took him up the River Spree to Lake Müggelsee, and Chris Crichton then became the leader of Operation James Bond. Chris Crichton was 21 at the time, and he managed, against all odds, to get Martin Bormann out by kayaks, kayak down the River Spree for about 10 days, and then back to England.
Incredible.
And then during the Nuremberg trials, the head of M, who was Desmond Morton, he took Martin Bormann, who had had plastic surgery by then, took him to the Nuremberg trials, and Martin Bormann watched his own trial in absentia at the Nuremberg trials. That's how much of a fraud the Nuremberg trials were.
That's
amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, that is very exciting information. I don't think there is anything written like that.
Yes, there is, actually. Chris Crichton actually wrote that up.
Okay, so that's
what called Operation James Bond, which he published in 1996.
Well, then why isn't it in the public knowledge, just basic knowledge?
Well, the book's out there. If you look up Chris Crichton and you look up Operation James JB, I think it's called, or Operation James Bond, it's there. Now, he said it was the most secret and disavowed mission ever.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I'd finished researching Hitler, and I'd actually written, I've written four volumes on it, and Hitler Was a British Agent is volume one in that series.
Well, you've says here that you went into really great detail. Operation Winnie the Pooh, as Hitler's escape was out of Berlin, May 1945. Who he flew with, the planes, even the plane serial numbers you've documented.
Yeah.
So you've actually.
I've got a photo of the plane.
Yeah. Right.
That he flew out in. Right.
Okay, so you have the smoking gun then.
Yeah, I've got the smoking gun. What they used to do in operations is they used to wax over the original serial number and paint a new serial number on there. Right?
Yes.
And so that if anyone saw the plane and noted the serial number during the operation, they could say that that plane doesn't exist or the serial number of that plane was elsewhere.
Okay.
And when they got back to base, like in this case, the Lysander was flown back to Barcelona. As soon as they did that, it was taken into a hangar, and then the serial number was heated up and it melted off, and the original serial number was placed there. So they used some really confusing numbers, right? Now I've got it here. Western Lysander 3A, serial number V9673. Modified in the 1990s with the serial number changed to V9367. While still claiming 161 Squadron Allegiance. So the change to the serial number, the numbers that they used, are very similar, so that when you look at them and even read them next to each other, they read as the same number. So it was V9673 and V9367.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the bottom line is he got out, he went to Spain. Okay, how long did he live? Is he still alive?
Well, he lived in what the Spanish did was close their borders in April 1945, and then state that they were a safe haven for war criminals. So that meant that no investigators could go into Spain, but war criminals could go into Spain. And within a month of that happening, Hitler was in Spain, mm-hmm. and Hitler had arranged his escape to Spain at a meeting in Hendaya in and then General Franco and Ramon Serrano Sooner, as 2IC, had a public spat, and then Hitler denounced Ramon Serrano Sooner, and then Sooner kind of lived quietly from about 1942 to 45, and then was the main go-between between Hitler and Franco and the British. And Ramon Serrano Sooner was raised in an area of Spain which had strong MI6 influence.
So
he was always connected with the British.
I'm surprised they didn't kill Hitler off. I mean, his own people, the people who programmed
him. Well, they did in the end. See, what happened was Hitler was taking care of the roses at the Parque Ciudadela in Barcelona.
That's incredible.
And some Irish cadets had gone down to Barcelona to be billeted out over the Christmas and New Year of 1949-1950. And on the very early morning of New Year's Day 1950, like, you know, sort of about 1:30 in the morning, an Irish cadet was walking around and walked up to the Parque Ciudadela and he was admiring the roses. And he met Hitler there. And they were talking about the roses, and Hitler was speaking perfect English. And then the Irish cadet, who was about 23 at the time, he went back to his sergeant and said, "Look, I've just been speaking with Hitler about his roses, and Hitler spoke in perfect English." And his superior officer pistol whipped him and then reported it to intelligence, and then there was a big discussion about what to do, and the risk that Hitler posed had become more than the value that he presented, and there was a decision to terminate him.
Mm-hmm.
So and the British did it, and they got radiation plates and stuck it in his mattress. And he developed stomach cancer and died 6 weeks later on the 19th of February, 1950.
Now, radiation plates,
radioactive plates.
Radioactive plates, but yes. Obviously they were not detected.
No, well, No, no.
Okay, so, but had he lifted the mattress, maybe they would have seen them there.
Maybe.
Okay. So then he died.
But, you know, Hitler wasn't suspecting anything.
Okay, so then he died early on because the risk was too great. Let's go back to the people that controlled him, the people that made Hitler, the Tavistock Institute. Hitler's sexuality, you have a section in that in the book.
Yeah.
The book, Hitler was a British agent. You can get, go to Greg's site. We have a link on our website right now.
Oh, good.
And so they're looking at that. We also have a guest section where they can also click on the guest section. You'll see Greg Hallett's information. Also, that we have a link right on the front page. So anyone listening to this there will be able to click over. But it's angelfire.com/trek, T-R-E-K, /spymaster/AUTH.htm. And that's the place where you can order the book right away. And you'll get it. My copy didn't get here because
had a sandstorm.
The DHL, company is very much involved in the occult. And so they mess with my delivery. But I have enough to go on here.
They were actually the same company that sent me to Moscow.
Okay, well, there you go. You see what I mean? But anyway, they said they would be back the next day last week. I signed their little form and left it clipped on to, you know, they had it stuck on this little post, and I signed it. The next day, they never showed up. So, but I am just frothing at the mouth, as it were, to get my hands on this book. Because why? Because this is just really confirming of a lot of the information that I've, you know, gone out with. In other words, you're helping me with this book. And I'm probably helping you that I can confirm this, you know, what we've talked about the occult, about politicians, about blackmail, about the way the world works. You see, folks, it's the same conversation that we were having with Frank Whalen earlier. We're having it now with Greg Hallett in New Zealand. It doesn't matter where you go in this world. The truth is the truth is the truth is the truth, and it doesn't change. I'm sorry if some of you are very disappointed to learn that you know, everything is rigged in that way. But look, this has been going on a lot longer than your little life here.
Yeah.
What is the Bible? The Bible says we're but a wisp of smoke. Or what does it say? But a vapor. That's what an individual life is. Look, this conspiracy didn't just start with the Rothschild family either. It's been going on. It's just that Rothschild seems to be at the top of the heap of what we might call the Illuminati, what we might call the actually bloodline elites is what I like to call them. Bloodlines that go back hundreds, thousands of years.
See, one of the main goals of the Hitler creation was to take the focus off Jesus and put it onto Hitler.
That's why the churches, the Protestant church in Germany, they all gave total devotion to Hitler. That's what was so amazing. They sold out to Hitler and started using the scriptures wrongly, Romans 13, in justifying their obeying orders, if you will.
Yeah, the Catholic Church backed him too.
And the Catholics backed him, which is incredible. And he was a madman, a mad dictator with he must have had some charisma, though. He must have had some kind of a demonic power that could just pull the wool over people's eyes. It couldn't just be programming,
well,
right?
Charisma can be created. Charisma comes from people who absolutely believe in everything that comes out of their mouth, whether it's true or not. Mm-hmm. And when you add the gestating of hands and a big audience that's absolutely captured, and someone yelling at them, appealing to things that they feel, you know, people believe that it's right and believe that this is the chosen one.
So they're willing to drop Jesus. Oh, well, today it seems that Jesus is very inconvenient. I've been told that...
That's a good way of putting it, very inconvenient.
Yeah, he's very inconvenient. I was told that if I would just drop that, you know, things would go... You know, I wouldn't have to, you know,
get
this
bigger audience.
Well, not a bigger... I have a... You know, I got the people out there that are like us, you know, and they all know where to go. There's just a few places to go right now. So they know where to go. I don't want a bigger audience, but in other words, the way it was put to me, that if you would drop that aspect of it, we could really go places. In other words, this could be a commercial success.
And there's a certain amount of truth in that.
Yes.
You know, some people would suggest that Jesus should be a private thing. And
no.
A lot of people think that Christians are sidelined, right, because of their constant referral to the Bible, etc. And the Bible is, you know, it's not an easy read.
No, but it does contain a lot of the information about the occult and about this whole spiritual battle. And but it, one must be, you know, just it's really a spiritual battle the way I see it. That when you're on that side of things, the occultic side, you have a certain spiritual power that will indwell you. And the same thing when you are on God's side, if you will, there's a certain power, although it's mysterious because there have been martyrs for the church. But there also on the other side, there are many people that have died horrible deaths and had a horrible time on the occultic side. The life wasn't just made for them. They didn't just have it a red carpet all the way through. It wasn't what it was. They promised that if you sold your soul, life would go very swimmingly smooth. And that didn't happen. I'll take you out to Hollywood, and I'll show you all those lights out there from Mulholland Drive. And you look over that Los Angeles, every one of those lights is a broken heart. Someone that sold out, and they got nothing but kicked in the teeth, discarded. Because that's not the way the game is played. It's like, thank you.
The thing is, you know, you're battling against physical force.
Mm-hmm.
And you're battling against control over the judiciary, control over social policy, and control over whether your country goes to war or not. And what the governments do is engineer hatred prior to war. And there's the whole engineering of Christian hatred against the Islamics and the Islamic hatred against the Christians. And that's completely engineered. And there's a lot of argument that says that Christianity and Islam are basically the same religion, and they have so much common, and they've been engineered for battle against each other.
Well,
like,
I can.
Muhammad and Jesus ascended to heaven from the rock on the mount.
Yeah, you know, the way that I look at it is like this. You know, there's a lot of Christians have been their own worst enemies. The church is, you know, the evangelical church in America has gone out with judgmentalism and hatred, and they fomented this hatred against Muslims, and you have to, you know, Bible thumping everybody all the time, judgmentalism all the time. They've ruined the you say, be a Christian, you mean like Jerry Falwell? No, thanks. Get the hell out of here. Leave me alone. I know so many people that won't consider any of it because they just say, look, religion is a control mechanism, period. But now when you're talking about spiritual warfare and the power of prayer and the power of, the great creator that made us against this occult conspiracy, I don't know where else to go for enough to be able to walk in this walk we're on. I don't know where else to go except into prayer.
Well, I'll tell you where I write. I write concisely, so that my modifier for everything I write is
yes.
that people can take the information, go down to the pub or wherever they drink or socialize, and say it in short sentences without waffle, and just be quite direct with it so that people can remember what's been said and what's been written.
Well, that's, you've got so much information that you put out in that first 15, 20 minutes where you just laid it out, one fact, another fact, another fact, another fact. And that's what our people really need to know. Let me ask you a few more questions here as we're
go ahead.
I'm considering this interview here to be just a primer, and I want to get you back on, get my hands on the book, and then I want to bring you back on to my RBN show, which is every week. And then that's also simulcast on two different streams. And, you know, it'll be interesting to have our callers call you up and ask you questions. But right now I want to go through this list. We have James Bond. Okay, Pearl Harbor. We all know that. Is there anything special in your information that goes against the general conspiracy information that we have already? Is there some
on Pearl Harbor?
On Pearl Harbor. We know that...
Well, Pearl Harbor was an inside job.
Yes.
Is that common knowledge now?
It's pretty well common knowledge, I think.
Yeah. See, Bywater was a consultant to the British Navy, and he wrote a plan for the British to attack America via Pearl Harbor. And he gave that to Yamamoto over a bottle of brandy one night in 1926. And then Yamamoto used that to attack Pearl Harbor. The British knew that Yamamoto had it, so the British and Americans made sure that there were no commercial or military ships anywhere between Japan and Pearl Harbor, and ensured that the American battleships were 1,000 miles southeast of Hawaii, mm-hmm. of Pearl Harbor, doing exercises, or carriers were 1,000 miles southeast, giving a 10-day corridor for the Japanese ships to go from Japan to Pearl Harbor and attack. And all the American planes at Pearl Harbor were parked nose to nose in a circle so that they couldn't be readily deployed. And the American High Command absolutely knew that the Japanese were coming. And a Dutch submarine, the K-17, I think it was, under Admiral Berejiklian, had signaled to England that Japanese ships were bearing down on Pearl Harbor. And Ian Fleming got Chris Crichton, who was then quite young, who was James Bond later.
Right.
He dropped him off on a flying boat onto the submarine and put cyanide in the oxygen tank and gave a gift from Queen Wilhelmina of brandy bottles, which were loaded with bombs, on the submarine, and then took off on the flying boat, and the submarine blew up. And then they went back to England and murdered the signal staff that had got the that had received the Pearl Harbor messages, or the messages from the Dutch submarine about the impending Pearl Harbor attack.
So Ian Fleming was involved in fomenting the war deception?
Yeah. See, Churchill was absolutely dependent on America entering the war. And if America did not have an excuse to join the war, then Germany would have taken over England. And as it was, Hitler could have won the war in 9 months by killing everyone at Dunkirk.
Yes.
But he held back and allowed, it was just close to 1 million men that escaped.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, Germany took over all the arms and armaments and guns and weapons that the Allies left behind, and including all the Low Countries.
So
you know, the whole thing was absolutely rigged. World War II was absolutely rigged. And wars on the scale of World War II are planned decades and decades and decades in advance.
Well, Greg Hallett, what do you think they have planned for World War III then?
Well, you know, 9/11 is not looking too clean.
That was our Pearl Harbor event, right?
Yeah, well, you know, the American government actually said that they needed another Pearl Harbor.
Well, I think it was PNAC, Project for a New American Century. I think there was some literature there, but yes, if they talked about having a Pearl Harbor event to pull the country together.
Well, it didn't pull the country together. It absolutely divided it.
Yes.
Divided Christians and Muslims, Democrats and Republicans, patriotism and now non-patriots, you know.
Right.
A lot of people in America were patriotic, and now they're going, hang on a minute, have we got a mafia government?
Yeah, they went to sleep is what happened.
Well, I think they got confused.
Yes, they're confused because I really don't think they got what they wanted with 9/11. I think they just totally underestimated the power of information and how fast the conspiracy was
unraveled.
It unraveled right off the bat. I mean,
yeah.
Within a year, which is a short time when you're talking about planning these things, within a year, it was all over the internet.
Yeah.
There were signs of Bush being dressed in a Nazi uniform, and it was all over the internet.
Was he dressed in Nazi uniforms, or was it made up?
No, it was made up, but then they had they showed how Karl Rove had Nazi memorabilia, and his family went back to the Nazis, and they had they were doing a parody of Bush being like Adolf Hitler. They were calling the Attorney General at the time. Oh gosh, just went out. Ashcroft. They were calling him the Himmler of the group. And it was quite amazing, and even Bush himself. I think he wasn't ready for it. His team that had controlled him were not ready for his psychological unraveling. He started yelling at people and dogs and children and talking to the walls and flipping everybody the finger. And that's now being documented, and that's coming out in the news. I don't know. It just feels...
This is George Walker Bush.
We're talking about Junior W. And, you know, so here all that's unraveled. And then they started pointing the finger at Dick Cheney. Like, he's the real bad guy. And then now, of course, Greg Hallett, you're bringing us into this idea that, you know, what you see out there in front, and I think we all know this now, these are not people that make decisions. Decisions, are, they're the people, they're puppets out in front in the media.
Yeah, yeah.
The president's...
Puppets for war. Like, W's grandfather, Prescott Bush,
yes,
was supplying arms and oil and everything that the Nazi government required. And he was breaching the Treaty of Versailles. So he was he was treasonous.
Yeah, it runs in the family.
His grandfather was absolutely treasonous. He was working as hard as he could to ensure that World War II went ahead.
Well, then we also had other revelations about the bin Laden family being involved. They tried to blame it all on bin Laden, and then the bin Laden family involved with the Bush family in the Carlyle Group. And then we learned about the Carlyle Group.
Yeah.
And we learned about the business of war. And then eventually we came all the way back around again to the Rothschild conspiracy that people like Myron Fagan were talking about back in the 60s with his phenomenal record. That
and
he
probably
made.
Not being believed at the time.
Well, it is today. And
yeah.
I see now that gold has spiked up $15 in the last 2 hours, which makes me believe that something is up.
Right.
That's where I'm at today. I'm very concerned. So I might as well say that in this broadcast, that this gold spike, I look at gold as a prophetic indicator, if you will. Something, when it spikes $15, something's wrong at somewhere. And
That means that people are buying gold because they think currency is going to be devalued.
Or
they can get devalued because of war and also mass death.
Yeah, there's something, but it's insider trading, I feel. That's pushing it today. I don't think it's just people, gold bugs going out because they want to have gold coins or something.
Yeah, gold's been artificially suppressed for decades.
Yes.
Decades, since about the 80s.
So now you've also talked about, let's get into some other aspects of, as we come into our last couple of minutes here. We talk about Hitler's had training, he had sex with men, so he was bisexual, basically, or he was homosexual, but he wanted women to abuse him. Let's say, is that something that he learned as a child, or was that bred into him by his conditioning?
What happens is they have their deconstruction training sessions, and they have their centuries of intelligence, military intelligence learning downloaded into them.
Mm-hmm.
And then at night they have a big sex session where everyone in the training has sex. And then they just watch them and see how their sexuality develops, what it develops into.
Mm-hmm.
And the most sexually perverse people are promoted because they are the easiest to control. And Hitler, it was homosexuality and coprophilia.
Okay, in other words, being defecated on, being urinated on.
Speak for it as scat. He likes to be
scat, right.
Urinated on or shat on.
Slang term, scat. And that.
And a lot of his partners, a lot of his girlfriends found that abhorrent, and they would be suicided.
Okay. Well, the point is the making is that, you know, back then we didn't know much about that, but on the internet with all the porn on the net, the last, I'd say, 15 years, there's a lot of people who've gotten into, who have gone that way.
Yeah.
That abuse.
See, porn is a way of controlling the masses. Like a lot of the, virtually every sex club is filmed. And
people probably don't know that.
Yeah, yeah, people don't generally know that. And then that information is used to control that person. And the people who are into the most debauched sort of sexual practices are promoted. So we get a lot of reports of judges wearing nappies, etc., things like that.
We had one case here of a judge who would masturbate while the case was while listening to the case.
You're kidding?
No, he would he did it several times, and they finally busted him on it. But he got to that point where he was—I mean, he was behind the desk. You know what I mean? Behind that big desk and under with his
have
robe.
You got his name?
Actually, I can get that for you. I just have to Google that. But that's a quite a famous case that I found that fascinating, but also emblematic about where our society has gone, because we all know that, you know, initiation rites into these into Satanica, I call it. You know, if you want to be one of them, you know, skull and bones, the masturbation in the coffin in front of these people that film it, and then confessing everything bad you've done, right? That kind of thing. It's always something that they can get on you so they can control you. That's what initiation is. And so we just have this, you know, and one says, well, can one work within the system to change it? Can at this point, Greg, what do you think? Do you think that we can work within the system to change it?
Well, the system operates on shame, right? And
okay.
The secret knowledge of shame. And the best way to control things is to actually use that shameful knowledge on people in positions of power when they're abusing that power.
Okay.
Shame is the answer.
Okay,
right?
So.
And a lot of people go, oh no, and they get information, they go, oh no, it's too risky to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But if they don't say it, then the person who is shamed and in power is controlled by someone else.
Okay.
Right? So we've got all these people who are controlled by shame who are, you know, moving things towards the goals of the military-industrial complex.
Right, and they're afraid to speak up because they feel guilty, they feel ashamed, and so they don't speak up, and so this thing festers, and they keep their secrets, and these secrets in their mind somehow it hits a fear trigger. It hits their fear core, if you will, almost like a life and death thing. So they have this definite fear of this topic we're talking about, the use of shame to control leaders. And I might add, the rest of the population. Ultimately, they'd like to get everybody in this this net, this bondage.
Yeah, yeah. All of that. So, you know, if you've got a country's leader and judiciary and government that is completely sexually bent,
mm-hmm.
they will do whatever the intelligence community has wants to do because of the information on them. So it's important to expose people on their road to power. Like if someone's about to become a member of parliament or a senator, and they, you know, they're into pedophilia or they're married but they're homosexuals or they're cross-dressers or anything that they could be ashamed of,
mm-hmm.
And used as the wood against them.
What do you
it's
suppose?
Important that it becomes public knowledge.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we will just, you know, be people who talk in the background and have absolutely no influence on the outcome of humanity.
Yeah, okay, so they'll sell out and they'll play ball in order to, they think, do some good, but it just gets, their lives are ruined.
I'll tell you how prolific it is, you know. How many politicians do you know of through history who haven't sold out?
And I don't know of any, and I don't think there are any. You take a look at Bohemian Grove now. Here they import homosexual prostitutes. They cross-dress. These are just guys having an old fraternity fling. No, nothing. But wait a second. No, it isn't that at all. You know? And we've had an interview here, a series of interviews with Kay Griggs, who's found out her husband was some sort of an assassin. Finding out about all kinds of orgies with the military initiation into homosexuality, and led by Bavarian Illuminati, sources. And that's all on the record. Her testimony about what she learned about her husband, who then then when she came to expose all this, he disappeared. And no one's heard from him since.
He's either been killed or elevated to a higher position.
Yeah, they probably did a little plastic surgery. Now he's running some country in the third world, you know, paving the way for the World Bank to take over, you know. Greg,
see, the way colonizing happens now is via finances and social policy.
Yes.
And the social policy has been influenced by ideology. And almost all of the ideology that is now around the Western world has come out of Russia. And the Russians got Western politicians, took them to Russia, gave them any sexual practice that they wanted, filmed it, and then demanded that the Western politicians enact Soviet social policies in the West.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we've got this whole socialistic, communist, middle class and anything below.
So,
and we've got this fascist oligarchy controlling a communist middle and lower class, which is exactly what you have in America.
So it's all about sex.
Well, sex is the driver. And communism for the lower masses and fascism for the oligarchy is the goal. And the goal is to keep to erode the middle class and just have a lower class. And then have the super rich so that never the twain shall meet.
Much like the famous movie by Fritz Lang, Metropolis, had a perfect German Illuminati vision of horror, just like the book by Orwell, just like, as you say, The Animal Farm, also by Orwell, just like The Brave New World by another double agent, Aldous Huxley.
Yeah. Well, we mention in Appendix 12 of the book, we mention the origins of Animal Farm.
Mm-hmm.
How Orwell was in Barcelona and he went to a circus auction in June 1937. And there was an orangutan there for sale. And they tried to buy it, and they ended up recovering the orangutan out of a hotel room after it had killed a British aristocrat that had bought the orangutan and tried to have sex with it. And the orangutan had broken the aristocrat's neck, and that was the origin.
If that wasn't so sad, I mean, I'm sorry, I got to laugh, I'm sorry.
That was the origins of Animal Farm.
Okay. Well, you heard it here on Channel Z, folks. I don't see how we could top that for today. Greg Hallett, stay right there. I want to go ahead and get you on booked on the RBN show and other shows because I'm going to read this, and then we want to tear into it. Also, I want to open open up the discussion with our callers, and I know there's people that want to talk to you, but you definitely provide, you have an overview as well. See, that's what we're dealing with today. You have an overview of this whole world, how the world works, then you have a lot of specifics and great information. I know at least a couple other broadcasters already I've spoken to today, and they want to interview you already. And so it's just it's a matter of getting your schedule, you know, you're kind of a night person, right?
We're 20 hours ahead here.
Yeah, I know. It's weird going across the line, like the date line.
Because
right now, what time is it for you?
10:15 in the morning.
It's 2:30, and that's tomorrow. So you're already in...
I'm ahead of you guys.
Man. Yeah, you're in January 4th. You're January 4th, 10 a.m.
Things happen here first.
Okay, we're January 3rd, 2:14 p.m. But you know what? We have a lot of listeners in New Zealand. And I think they'd be very happy to hear you and you New Zealanders get in touch with Greg. Let's all get the book and let's support the truth tellers, okay? Because his information, his specifics is really rare. You won't find it anywhere else. Greg, one more time with your website and information, please.
Okay, it's www.angelfire.com/trek/spymaster.
Spymaster. Now, we didn't get into that today. I have a feeling you're keeping that secret.
Yeah, that's got to remain secret for a little bit longer.
Okay.
Who that is.
Okay, well, it's my job to hint it. I'd like to know more, but, it can wait. I will, you know, appreciate the need for confidentiality, of course. But, you know, when you researched this before, you know, when you were writing your book, it was a lot scarier to talk about than it is today. And I wonder if that means we're closer to this, some kind of a chaos type solution for these people. Anyway, we'll find out. Greg Hallett, stay right there. Friends, you've been listening to Channel Z. This is Zeph Daniel, your host, and I am here with you daily. We give you the news fix every morning, and all kinds of things are happening at ZephNet.com. If you're hearing us in the podosphere, you can subscribe to The Zeph Report, The Zeph Report, in any podcasting outlet, and you will be able to get our feed and get all these shows, whether you like it or not. And you know what? God bless each and every one of you. We're praying for you. We love you. We want the best for you. We're truth seekers. We're not going to compromise here. So I will see you on the flip side.